Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand and Dorothy Gundy. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, researchers say they have created a new supermaterial in the laboratory. They say it is stronger, lighter, and costs less than steel. But the new material is not a product of high technology or a metallic substance. It is wood. Researchers Liang Bing-hu and Tung Li are with the University of Maryland in the United States. By using a few chemicals, heat, and pressure, they have made wood 3 times denser and 10 times stronger. Who says that means it can compete with some of the world's strongest materials? We're interested in replacing steel and carbon fibers with strong wood structures, he said. The process does not require any special raw, unprocessed material. Who said that means the cost of the product will be relatively low? He added, "We can start with very cheap wood, and we can also start with very fancy, expensive wood. But in the end, ultimately, we get very similar performance." The researchers are calling their product Superwood. It is made by partially removing a natural polymer called lignin. Who explained that lignin is like a binder to hold all the components together in natural wood. In our process, we found out to be able to densify the wood completely, we have to remove some of these binders. Strong chemicals are put on the wood. The chemicals remove about half of its lignin. Then, after being left in extreme heat and pressurized for a day, the treated wood is ready. The researchers say the wood is strong enough to build automobiles, airplanes, wind turbines, and more. A report on their findings was published in the journal Nature. The researchers say super-strength wood would have less of an effect on the environment than the steel or other metals it could replace. However, their process is not pollution-free. It uses some of the same chemicals involved in making paper. Researcher Tung Li says he and Hu are finding many new ways to use wood, including creating batteries and see-through wood and paper.
Wood has been existing on Earth more than 1 million years, and human beings have been using wood for furniture constructions more than 10,000 years. And then the more we worked on this material, we realized we haven't never fully exhausted the potential of this amazing material.
Other scientists are finding new uses for wood as well. Researchers in Sweden have reported making wood-based super-strong fibers for clothing and other materials.
Elephants have had a rich history in Myanmar, the country also known as Burma. Throughout the country's past, the animals have been used for everything, including transportation, agriculture, and warfare. The white elephant was a symbol of power for the military that ruled the country for more than 50 years until it gave power to a civilian government in 2016. But the survival of elephants is under threat. There are about 2,000 wild elephants left in Myanmar today, plus about 5,000 that are captive. But conservationists warn that elephants are losing their natural places to live in. They say increased conflict with humans and the illegal sale of elephants and their parts could result in the extinction of the Asian elephant in Myanmar. The Ministry of Natural Resources and Environmental Conservation published the Myanmar Elephant Conservation Plan. The plan was produced with several wildlife groups. It aims to guide policies on the survival of elephants in Myanmar for the next 100 years or more.
Anthony Lynham is a senior advisor for the Wildlife Conservation Society. He told VOA by email that the government of Myanmar decided to ask for a study of the threats to elephants. He added that the MECAP plan will need bold action on the part of the government and supporting agencies for it to succeed. MECAP includes a series of 10-year plans and an overall strategy for elephant conservation in Myanmar. One of the biggest threats to the survival of elephants in Myanmar is the illegal killing of the animals, especially for their skin. It has been argued that poaching is a minor threat to Asian elephants because some males and all females lack tusks, the report said. But the report also said that elephants are poached for meat and leather as well as for their tusks.
Christy Williams is the country director for the World Wildlife Fund, or WWF, in Myanmar. She told VOA there had been an increase in the number of elephants being killed for their skin in Myanmar in recent years. Elephants being targeted for their skin was unusual, he said. But then in 2016 or 2017, we started seeing that about one elephant was being killed every week. Williams said when WWF researchers traveled to border towns in 2016, only a few markets were selling elephant skins. But when they returned about a year later, about 80% of shops were selling elephant skin, he said. One of the major difficulties in combating the illegal sale of elephant parts, said Williams, was the small staff and a lack of money. Also, many of the border towns where elephant skins are being sold are not under government control. The plan asks for an increase in staff and for education efforts to show people that selling elephant parts is illegal.
Another problem was the increase in conflict between humans and elephants. Mark Grinley is a project manager for the non-governmental group Fauna and Flora International, Myanmar. He says the elephant's natural habitat is shrinking. The natural habitat is being lost, Grinley told VOA, to large industrial farms and to the demand for palm oil. The effects of the increased interaction between humans and elephants has led to injuries and death for both. Suggestions for dealing with the issue include establishing a national management plan and supporting existing elephants. Other ideas include building a warning system so that people know when elephants are nearby. As the country of Myanmar continues to develop, the issue of elephant protection will not go away, said Grinley. As the forest habitat is shrinking, I'm afraid these problems are going to be more common, he said. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm Susan Shand. American veteran Jeff Harris was one of the first people to ask for acupuncture when Veterans Hospital in Providence, Rhode Island began to offer it. I don't like taking pain medication. I don't like the way it makes me feel, he said. Harris also did not want to risk getting addicted to pain-killing drugs. The use of acupuncture has increased among patients and doctors in America over the years. The effectiveness of the treatment remains disputed in Western medicine. However, some consider it better than powerful painkillers that are blamed for the crisis of opioid drug use in America. The Veterans Affairs medical system has been offering acupuncture to treat pain for several years. Some insurance companies cover it. Now, some states have started to offer acupuncture to patients who have Medicaid, an insurance program for the poor. The states are mainly ones where many people have become sick or died from overdosing on opioid drugs.
The opioid crisis is believed to have started with the misuse of pain-killing drugs prescribed by doctors. Many people became addicted to opioid drugs after seeking help to relieve pain. Acupuncture could be a way to help keep some patients from using opioids in the first place. For a long time in the U.S., acupuncture was considered unstudied and unproven. There has now been a lot of research on acupuncture use for different kinds of pain. However, results of the studies have been unclear. Many doctors are undecided about acupuncture, but are willing to let patients give it a try. Dr. Stephen Novella is a neurologist at Yale University and editor of a website that is against non-traditional medicine. He does not think acupuncture works. Those who believe in acupuncture are using America's opioid problems to try to promote acupuncture as an alternative treatment, he said. Acupuncture has been practiced in China for thousands of years. Acupuncturists put thin metal needles into specific spots in the ears or other parts of the body. They say needles put in these spots restore the flow of energy, called qi, through the body. This heals the body and eases pain. In government studies, 1 in 67 U.S. adults say they get acupuncture every year, up from 1 in 91 in 2008. A recent study says now 2/3 of military hospitals and other treatment centers offer acupuncture. Emmeline Edwards of the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health, a federal research agency, says the military is more open to try new methods because the need is so great there. Her agency is working with the Defense Department and the Department of Veterans Affairs to spend $81 million on research projects. The agency wants to study the effectiveness of many treatments for pain that do not use drugs. While research continues, the willingness of medical insurance companies to pay for acupuncture is growing. California, Massachusetts, Oregon, and Rhode Island pay for acupuncture for pain through their Medicaid insurance programs. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm Susan Shand.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Years of disagreement between the North and the South finally burst into civil war in April of 1861. 7 states in the South had withdrawn from the Union. Soldiers of the new Confederate States of America shelled the Union base at Fort Sumter, built on an island in Charleston Harbor in South Carolina. They captured Fort Sumter after 2 days. President Abraham Lincoln asked the states of the Union for 75,000 soldiers to help end the Southern Rebellion. Northern states quickly sent forces to Washington, but border states, those between the North and the South, refused to send any. Some prepared to leave the Union and join the Confederacy. Steve Ember and Shirley Griffith describe the first days of the American Civil War.
The first state to secede after the start of the Civil War was Virginia. It was an important state because of its location. It was just across the Potomac River from Washington. Virginia's decision to secede cost the Union a military commander of great ability. He was Robert E. Lee. Lee was a Virginian and had served in the United States Army for more than 30 years. Lincoln asked him to be head of the Army when General Winfield Scott retired. Lee said he could not accept the job. He said he opposed secession and loved the Union. But, he said, he could not make war on his home state. Lee resigned from the Army. He did not really want to fight at all. But soon after his resignation, he agreed to command the forces of Virginia.
Virginia's forces moved quickly after the state seceded. A group of 1,000 soldiers went to Harper's Ferry, Virginia, where the Union Army had a gun factory and arsenal.
It was the same town where abolitionist John Brown had tried to start a slave rebellion a few years before. The United States force at Harper's Ferry was small. The soldiers could not defend the town against the Virginians, so they left. Before marching away, the soldiers set fire to the gun factory and arsenal. The fire did not destroy all the equipment at the gun factory. When the Virginians captured the town, they sent the equipment south, where it was used to make guns for Confederate soldiers.
Virginia's forces also moved against the United States' biggest Navy base, which was at Norfolk, Virginia. Once again, the Union force withdrew. Before leaving, it burned every building and sank every ship. President Lincoln was becoming increasingly worried about Virginia's military moves. He was afraid Confederate forces in Virginia might try to capture Washington in the first days of the war. After all, the Confederate Secretary of War had declared that the Confederate flag would fly over the Capitol building before the 1st of May. Washington was not strongly defended. It did not have enough soldiers to stop any real attempt by Confederate forces to seize the city. It was extremely important to get more soldiers to Washington as quickly as possible.
Thousands of men were on their way to Washington, but they could not get there quickly. Troop trains had to pass through the state of Maryland to get to Washington from the north. Many people in the state supported the Confederacy. The governor, however, did not. He refused to call a meeting of the state legislature. He was afraid it might vote to secede. He wanted to keep Maryland neutral. The first troop train from the north passed through Baltimore, Maryland, without incident. The second train was not so lucky. A mob blocked the rail line and threw stones at the train. Shots were fired. 4 soldiers and 12 civilians were killed. State and city officials met to discuss the trouble. They agreed that there would be even more violence in the future. So they ordered railroad bridges outside Baltimore destroyed. No more trains from the north could reach Washington that way.
President Lincoln told the officials of the great need to get more soldiers to the Capitol. He agreed that they did not have to pass through Baltimore, but he wanted them to be able to land safely at Annapolis, a city on the Chesapeake Bay. Landing at Annapolis would be easy. Getting to the Capitol would not. Supporters of the Confederacy had damaged trains, rail lines, and bridges between the two cities. The first soldiers to land at Annapolis had to repair everything as they moved ahead. Still, with all these difficulties, 10,000 troops made it to Washington in the first few weeks of the Civil War. The city and government were safe.
President Lincoln worried about the presence of Confederate supporters in Maryland. He knew they would continue to be a threat to the movement of Union troops and supplies. Lincoln wanted to restrict the activities of the Confederate supporters, so he took an extremely unusual step for an American president. He put much of Maryland under military rule. He gave military officers the power to arrest civilians believed to be hostile to the Union. and he gave them the power to hold these suspects without trial. This order suspended two of the basic rights under the Constitution. One was the right to go free until officially charged, and the other was the right to a speedy trial. The Chief Justice of the United States wrote a letter to President Lincoln. He said the Constitution did not give the President the power to suspend the rights of citizens. Lincoln disagreed. He felt the situation facing the Union permitted him to take such strong measures. If he had not acted, he believed, Maryland would have seceded.
Maryland did not withdraw, but North Carolina, Tennessee, and Arkansas did. There were now 11 states in the Confederacy. There could be two more. No one knew how long Kentucky and Missouri would remain in the Union. Both supported the Southern rebels. President Lincoln treated Kentucky carefully. He did not want the state to secede, nor did he want it to remain neutral. Kentucky reached from the mountains of Virginia to the Mississippi River. As a neutral state, Kentucky could block Northern troops from much of the South. Lincoln wanted it firmly on the side of the Union. The president did not use force in Kentucky, as he had done in Maryland. Instead, he sent people to Kentucky to organize support for the Union. Newspapers were urged to publish pro-Union statements. Home Guard forces were formed. They received their weapons and supplies from Lincoln's administration. Lincoln hoped that in time, these efforts would win Kentucky's support for his war effort.
In Missouri, the governor tried hard to take the state out of the Union. He called a convention to decide the question. A majority of the delegates refused to vote for secession. The governor organized state soldiers. The Lincoln administration organized Home Guard forces. The two sides clashed several times. Some civilians were killed. The United States Army finally seized government buildings in the state capital. They forced state officials, including the governor, to flee. Missouri would remain in the Union.
The capital of the Confederate States of America was located far south in Montgomery, Alabama. Within the first few weeks of the Civil War, the Confederate Congress voted to move the capital farther north to Richmond, Virginia. They believed Virginia would be an important battlefield in the war. They were right. 2 days before Confederate President Jefferson Davis left for Richmond, Union troops invaded Virginia. They left Washington, crossed the Potomac River, and seized the towns of Arlington and Alexandria. No shots were fired. Confederate forces withdrew as Union troops moved forward. Within a month, thousands more Union soldiers were in Virginia. They were to prepare for a major battle at a place called Manassas Junction, or Bull Run.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.